The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 342. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside, he only does everything, Colin Moriarty.
Now, usually I like to take a breath and say Beyond a little bit after you, but Vince jumped in there like he thinks he's a fucking OG, saying Beyond before I'm saying Beyond. So, Vince, I need you to leave the podcast.
It's been nice, everyone.
Then that other voice you hear, the PlayStation Wonder Kid.
Beyond, Vince. Ingenito.
Wonder Kid?
Yeah.
Wonderkind.
I usually say Wonderkind. Today I said Wonderkind.
Wunderbar.
Oh, no. Nope.
It's so hot, though. You got to drink it like that.
It's not even that hot.
You got to slurp it,
though. It's not hot at all. No. And maybe it's trying to tell you something.
Man, I don't think so. I don't think it's trying to tell me anything. What's up, everybody? This is Podcast Beyond, IGN's PlayStation podcast, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. Every Tuesday, we post it as an MP3. Every Wednesday, as a video on IGN.com, YouTube.com/IGN, and the IGN PlayStation 4 app, which you can get for absolutely nothing. So go do that. How's everybody doing?
I'm all right.
I didn't want to jump in. I was about to be like, I'm doing great, Greg, but I didn't want to, you know.
See, you're hungry.
Piss
young.
Off
you're
old man grumpy over here.
Yeah.
Colin's like that old cat in the yard. Yeah. Nobody fucks with that cat. And then somebody does, like, right in the head.
You described IGN once to me as like a bunch of cats.
We are a herd of cats.
Like, you know, that when I first came in, I was like, yeah, everyone's kind of like, eh. Like, dude, we're just all a bunch of like angry old cats. You know, we're going to hiss at you for a while. And then, you know, after a while, we're just going to bop you in the face.
Then eventually you're one of us.
Yeah.
It's fine.
That's me hissing.
Here's a question I have for you, Vince. Mm-hmm. What happened to your glasses? I've been noticing this week you got a scratch.
Yeah, the scratch, it's been growing like consistently over the last couple of weeks, and it's like one of those things where I moved from San Francisco to Walnut Creek, and work's been busy, so it's like I haven't had a second to really kind of get this situation. This is the situation he's talking about.
If you're looking on the video,
it's reverse bifocal.
Yeah, it's
reverse bifocal.
Yeah. It's a bifocal turned 90 degrees. Yeah, it's a disaster. I got to sort my life out, but don't worry. By the time I come back from vacation, I will be looking spiffy and brand new, I promise.
You look spiffy to me all the
time. Oh, thank you.
Hell of a show for you, ladies and gentlemen. Going to talk about that Borderlands 2 on Vita, some Batman Arkham Origins stuff, and a whole bunch of listener mail. But first, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news.
There are 11 items on the
11.
List.
11. Close to a dozen.
That's a plethora of news.
It is a lot
a myriad.
Of news. Myriad. It's the reverse baker's dozen.
A cornucopia.
Real quick, are we said a couple weeks ago, Greg, not on the podcast, but actually in private, that Tuesdays were going to be mandate days.
Right.
But we'd never, not mandate, not like a mandate,
sure.
But a man date.
Yeah.
Are we doing that tonight? Because I just forgot about it.
I did too.
And
you
and
made plans?
No.
Okay.
I don't ever have plans.
Okay. Sometimes you go to dinners with people.
That's true.
You have plans on Sunday.
I do go to clandestine dinners.
And you have plans on Sunday. You're absolutely like, do not screw with me on Sunday.
Well, that's
he doesn't roll on Shabbos.
During football season.
Football season, I am, from preseason all the way through the Super Bowl, do not even talk to me on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Because it's not... I'm not going anywhere.
Unless you're watching football, then you're fine.
Yeah, if you want to come over and watch football, you're more welcome to do that. But otherwise, don't even talk to me.
Getting back to Mandate, which sounds like Mandrake from Harry Potter. No, let's not do it. Because I leave town on Thursday. we have to record a show tomorrow night.
Mm.
So rather than just being like, hey, Steimer, Monday was your last night with me. Tough.
I don't think she really likes you that much.
I think she likes me all right. All right.
No, okay.
She likes the flavor. She likes the flavor.
It's like she likes Guild Wars and Portillo and me.
Then I'm going to play Transistor tonight.
Oh, that's what I want to play Walking Dead. I'm going to play Walking Dead and then Transistor.
I should be packing tonight, but I'm probably going to play Transistor instead.
Number one. For the fourth time in 5 years, Sony Corporation will post a loss. For the fiscal 2013 year, which ended in March of 2014, Sony posted a loss of $1.27 billion, up from the company's projection in February of losing $1.07 billion, and a far cry from the $489 million the company projected to earn some time ago. In solidarity, Sony CEO and President Kaz Hirai, along with numerous other executives, will take 50% pay cuts and return their annual bonuses, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Dang.
This is a very traditional Japanese thing to do, but still very interesting. And, you know, that's a symbolic thing.
Right.
Yeah. That will mean nothing to the bottom line there. You know, they probably get, you know, collectively $50 million in bonuses or something across the board. And then their salaries. I mean, who gives a shit? But it's them saying, like, we will suffer too.
Hey, we screwed up. We're going to try to fix it.
We're going to pay for it. Yeah.
What does it mean, Colin? You're the numbers guy around here.
Oh, sure.
You're the businessman.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No doubt.
So.
Got that MBA.
We always talk about it, that the PlayStation business is doing fine.
Yeah.
Sony's the one that's struggling. What does that mean in the grand scheme of things?
I don't know. I mean, so the loss that they posted, they blame almost entirely on the PC division, which they're trying to spin off and sell.
Yeah.
So they apparently have so much unused stock, I guess, in parts and computers, like finished computers, that like they have to take these as losses on their books. Mm. I assume that that will be fixed once they, you know, get rid of this particular division. What it means for PlayStation, I don't know. I don't think it means anything. I think if they're smart, they let PlayStation kind of do its thing. Kaz Hirai, who is the CEO of Sony Corp, comes from PlayStation, and so I think he knows the benefit of letting PlayStation kind of flex its muscles. But the Wall Street Journal makes a good point that they project to sell 20 million pieces of hardware this year, this fiscal year. So that's PS4 and Vita and even PSP.
Yeah.
So you assume 15 million of that is PS4. But they were saying that even those numbers seem lofty, but compared to 6 years ago, that's down 45%. That they projected to sell almost 40 million units and did 6 years ago before they started posting losses. And that was when PS3, PS2, and PSP.
The PSP.
So the market is shrinking. PS4 is doing great, but the overall PlayStation market seems to be shrinking. So, you know, who knows what it means. They make a lot of money in weird ways, too. They have, like, banking services and medical equipment and, like, all sorts of weird shit. They're reviving the Walkman brand, which apparently is supposed to be, like, as a digital, you know, digital device, which is supposed to be pretty cool. And their 4K TV shit, they just won't give it up. So,
that's too bad. Three richest kings will buy these and we'll be set.
So, that's basically all the insight I have.
It was good.
It's fast.
As usual.
It's fascinating to me just because if you turn back the clock to when the first PlayStation hit and Sony was absolutely known as a leader in electronics, you know, like TVs and music players, you never would have guessed that in a decade that or more that it would be their gaming division that would be leading the company.
Right.
That everything else would seem like more or less dead weight. Like the idea, I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen. Who knows? Like you said, they just won't give up on these things sometimes. They're very stubborn. A lot of companies are when they put a lot of money into R&D for something. But it would be amazing if we saw a future, maybe another 10 years down the road, where Sony is literally PlayStation and not much else. I mean, I don't want to see that for sure. But the idea that could happen, that kind of reversal, could be fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, they make good electronics, really good electronics, but they sell them at a premium. You just can't do that anymore. Like, especially their South Korean competitors and some of their Japanese competitors are just destroying them because they make TVs and, you know, cameras and shit that are just as good, and they don't charge an arm and a leg for them.
Markedly cheaper, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Number two. Konami has revealed that its game sales are down 37% year over year. In its most recent fiscal year, the company sold 10.81 million games, down from 13.61 million games the year before. Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes has been a strong performer for the company, as has the Japanese-only baseball game on PS3 and Vita, Professional Baseball Spirits, which sells extraordinarily well over there. I'm not sure if it's like a... I'm not sure if that's like a licensed game for the Japanese Baseball League, or if that's... Because the Japanese Baseball League's pretty big deal over there.
Oh, yeah.
Or if it's like some sort of like you know, very Japanese, you know.
I think it's that you're playing with spirits of passed on baseball players.
Yeah, I wonder. I want to know more. Like, I want to know more about that.
I would like to play a baseball game like that. It's been so long since there's been good, like, arcade style baseball games. Like, back, like, I want to play a Japanese developed baseball game again. Like, I want another baseball simulator. That's what I want. Baseball Simulator 3000. Okay. Like the, it's like, it was like Mario Baseball before Mario Baseball.
It's that OG Mario Baseball.
Yeah.
Had fire flowers.
Mm-hmm.
This is a quick aside, but number three, similar to its first-party cousin Gran Turismo, which had a heavy slate of post-release DLC, Drive Club will be supported by a litany of microtransactions that will be available on day one. You can learn more about Drive Club, including about its cars, tracks, and more on IGN. We have a bunch of shit up about that game right now. That's the big first-party game for this fall. So,
can't wait.
Enjoy.
Are you going to play it?
No. Not even a prayer of me playing that game.
You going to play The Crew?
No. I don't play racing games.
Do you hate cars?
Yes. I don't play racing games.
You going to play Mario Kart 8?
Yeah, I'll play Mario Kart 8. Okay. Those aren't real cars, though. Those are fictional.
I know. I'm just seeing where we are on the gauge scale of what we care about.
Those are the missing golf carts from Mario Golf.
Mario Golf Kart. Number four. Killzone Shadowfall and Infamous Second Son may be huge sellers on PlayStation 4, but the console's best-selling game is Call of Duty Ghosts. Activision revealed this news in its fiscal report. The company's follow-up to Ghosts, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, will be released this November. I thought and had said incorrectly that Killzone was actually the best-selling game on the system because it sold about 2.5 million units. So that's pretty remarkable that on 7 million PS4s, there might be 3 million or more copies of Call of Duty.
Ghosts.
A lot of people didn't think that the jump would make Call of Duty gamers would make that jump to next gen. I really liked that game, Ghosts. I thought it was really fun. The campaign was good. The that like survival mode, the online mode. I can't remember what it's called anymore.
I remember something Extinction, about a dog.
Riley.
Was that a thing?
Yeah, that was stupid. But I like Call of Duty game, like campaigns.
I like dogs.
Yeah, so you're in good. They should take all of the campaigns from the Call of Duty games and put them on one disc and sell it. That'd be fun.
The part that nobody plays.
That's not true. A lot of people play it.
You and I play it.
A lot of
most Call of Duty people don't. Alfredo and all his little first person shooter friends, none of them play.
You think they want to practice or something?
They do. They well, I mean, it's a completely different skill set though. You practice against other people. I'll go on multiplayer.
I'll go on multiplayer and wreck shop.
You will not.
Oh yeah.
No.
No one will touch me. Number five. Bandai Namco has revealed that Dark Souls 2 has sold 1.2 million copies in North America and Europe. Those sales only track through the end of March and don't count recently released PC iteration, indicating that sales are likely far higher. For context, the original Dark Souls sold 2.3 million copies as of April 2013. These are interesting sales here. The company revealed that Dragon Ball Z Battle of Z for PS3, Vita, and 360 sold 620,000 units. The Vita and PSP exclusive God Eater 2 that's only out in Japan sold 700,000 units. And PS3 fighter JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle only in Japan sold 550,000.
Yep.
You know fighting games.
I know a thing or two about those fighting
games. Didn't you freelance JoJo when it came here or something?
No, I bought it in Japan.
He bought it in Japan at TGS, and then I did a little coverage on it, and then I did the review and a video preview. I love that game.
Number six. This is interesting. This is an interesting little insight here, Vince. Last week, we reported that Sony sold all of its shares in Square Enix that it owned. But there was a reason for that. Square Enix producer Shinji Hashimoto revealed that Sony originally bought the stock in 2001 to help Square Enix through financial trouble. Mm-hmm. Now that the situation is reversed, Square Enix decided to help Sony during its own financial issues. Speaking of Square Enix, the company has officially returned to profitability on the back of the Final Fantasy X-X-2 HD Remaster and Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, all of which Square Enix described as having favorable sales. I'm surprised they didn't include Bravely Default in there.
Favorable.
it might not have been considered a favorably selling game by their standards. Who knows?
Likewise, Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn is doing well for the company. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all good. All signs are pointing up for them. It sounds like they've figured out where their money is really going to come from and realized that they have to support kind of their core fans and start giving people what they want, which is role-playing games, like the ones they used to make.
Yeah,
exactly. With heart and soul and with some depth and complexity. So
and sprites.
And sprites.
Number seven. So Sony originally posted on its promotional page for Watch Dogs that the game will run at 1080p and 60 frames per second.
But they lied!
No, it was the Definitive Edition! Why would you play anywhere else?
However, that information has since been scrubbed from the site once it started making the rounds on the internet. Neither Ubisoft or Sony has responded to IGN's request for clarification. I'm going to say this real quick. Who the fuck cares?
Thank you, that's what I was going to say.
I am so tired of this resolution shit and like, here's what's important in a video game. Is it fun? Does it play well? Then who cares what it looks like? You know, like a game could run at 25 frames per second at 720 or whatever, or like what, like I don't care, like what resolution it's at. You know, it could run at Wii resolution. Is it fun? Okay. Does it have NES graphics? That's nice. Is it fun? Yes. Good. Let's move on. Vince, do you have something to say?
Maybe, or maybe maybe it would be something best said later when we discuss Borderlands 2.
Oh, doctor.
Fair enough. I'm just like, who? Like the whole 1080 thing, it's like, I don't care. You know, like, I'm like, I just want to play fun games. I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. Like, let's focus on mechanics and less on resolution.
Well, we're back to just, you know, all you have to do, the fact sheet face-off of what is going to be the better version. Well, it's, this has got 1080 and Xbox doesn't, so clearly this is the better version.
The PlayStation 4 is better because that's trophies. Number 8. The Darksiders franchise isn't dead, according to creative director Joe Majurera. I think that's how you say it. Nordic Games, which is a publisher, acquired the franchise from THQ during THQ's IP liquidation, along with Red Faction and MX vs. ATV. But as Nordic Games isn't a developer, it will need to find devs to work with. The series' old creative director's words seem to indicate that Nordic Games has plans for the franchise moving forward, though what those plans are remain to be seen. That's pretty cool.
I'm really excited about that. I love Darksiders. I interviewed Joe Mad right leading up to the release of Darksiders 2. Super passionate guy. Cares very, very much about this property. Has a big, grand vision for it. He talked about some of the ideas that he had initially for it and the scope of it and scale of it. I really hope that he gets to continue chiseling out that vision, because if it's anything like what he described to me when we talked, I think it's something that people will react to.
Killed THQ, now it's going to kill another publisher.
That's fine, as long as I get to play the games. I
don't care. As long as I get killed after it's released.
Number 9. According to Sony Computer Entertainment Europe's senior designer Jed Ashforth, DualShock 4's light bar was originally designed with Project Morpheus in mind. Project Morpheus is, of course, the PlayStation brand's recently revealed VR headset, which was first shown to the world a couple of months ago at GDC. Sony recently released a patch that allows the light bar to be dimmed, though there's no word on if and when we can shut it off. That's it. Number 10.
Austin writes into beyond@ign.com and says, last generation, everyone's living rooms were filled with motion controllers and plastic instruments. This generation, the Wii U, is so far a total failure, and Microsoft just announced the debundling of Kinect for Xbox One. Why is this? Are hardware manufacturers going to stop trying to innovate with consoles? What does this say for Oculus/Morpheus? Peripherals that will cost hundreds of dollars when they eventually release. I wish peripherals were dead. I remember when I remember getting the Super Scope, being like, here we go, and then this thing sucks and it works for two games, and hating them and being like, I'll never buy another peripheral.
Super Scope, that was a weird one.
And then by the time we got to like Rock Band and Guitar Hero, you had all these peripherals. I was like, no, not again. We're going down this path.
But they got you with those ones for a little while.
Yeah. And then like Wii comes out, it's got its controller, and then it's got like the steering wheel for Mario Kart and all. It's just like, stop.
Well, it's a fine line, because some of those peripherals that you just named were designed and engineered very well to deliver an experience that was like mirrored in the software, and they were married together very like cohesively. And then in some cases, like I would say the Kinect, you know, you've got a gadget that they're like, hey, let's see if we can find a game to make for this gadget. You know, when you look at the Rock Band and Guitar Hero craze, that was a piece of hardware custom built for a piece of software meant to interface in a meaningful way.
Right.
Kinect is like, well, let's put out a big blanket, you know, net over this problem of motion control and immersion and see what developers can come up with. And that's,
same thing can be said for PlayStation Move.
Sure.
Gen 1.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, and I think that's why, you know, Sony was smart to not go like balls to the wall all in on that. Basket of eggs.
They should have tried.
For a short time, but I think once they figured out it wasn't going to work, they were just like, okay, well, it exists, but we're not going to make our whole platform based around it.
Sure. Do you think this is the final generation of peripherals?
No.
They're going to be forever, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think peripherals are necessarily a bad thing. I think about the Zapper on NES was pretty cool. Like, it was only useful for a few games, but it was cool, and it wasn't, like, obtrusive, you know? You know, they had, you know, NES even had, like, the big, like, joystick controller and stuff. They were cool, and they were the point is that they were optional. When they tried to include things like Rob in the box, that's like when things kind of fell apart for them. Super Scope was cool because I used to play with it outside and pretend it was a missile launcher.
Sure.
But then, like, the Guitar Hero and Rock Band shit was like, that was a craze for a little while, and you had to have them. I understand, like, they're like in a fucking landfill somewhere now, but that was the way it goes. I think with these VR headsets, these are going to be boutique items that not everyone's going to buy. And as long as you don't shove them down people's throats, then it's going to be fine. People that want them are going to buy them. Whether or not they're successful has nothing to do with them being peripherals.
I mean, my question for them turns Project Morpheus in particular, because that really is a peripheral, whereas Oculus is kind of a platform. For Morpheus, it feels similar to what happened with PlayStation Move, where they're going to say, here's Project Morpheus, here's the launch of 10 games, and then it's going to be Morpheus doesn't sell that well, it doesn't sell spectacularly, and nobody else wants to support it. Because, you know, we're talking about with Shu at GDC, right? Like, he sees the games on Morpheus being, from the ground up, just for Morpheus. Just like a good PlayStation Move should be, like Deadman's Quest or whatever. But that game didn't sell, there was no one there, and then people stopped making PlayStation Move games.
Yeah,
poor, so how much rope do they get to make awesome Morpheus games?
Poor Zindagi. Making some good games, and they, no one gives a shit.
There's lots of proof for this Morpheus business.
Yeah, I will disagree that Oculus is a platform and Morpheus is... Like, they both need hardware to run.
100%.
So, the PC is the hardware. You know, I think the smartest thing is to just make games that use it if you want, but that don't force you to use it.
I feel like there'll be a more... I guess vibrant market, and this is I'm saying vibrant meaning, you know, five games to two games for Oculus versus Morpheus. Morpheus, you're trying to come to a group that is already a console PlayStation gamer that loves playing games with their controller and say, here's this new thing, a new way to play games. And that pitch sounds just like PlayStation Move. And unless you come out and you have all these awesome fucking experiences that people can't say no to, I don't understand the point.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to disagree with you on that, I agree it's a sales pitch. Yeah. I totally agree it's a sales pitch. The problem is that, I mean, I've been a salesperson. I know the difference between selling something that sucks and selling something that actually represents value to the to the end user. I've always felt from the beginning that Move, all that motion controlled stuff, was salespeople trying to sell snake oil to people who didn't need them. It was selling snowflakes to Eskimos. Like, we didn't need those things to control our games. The way I've felt from the time that I've spent with Oculus, I haven't spent time with Morpheus, but just from spending time with Oculus, it's the first time that one of these peripherals has come out, and I've said, I don't think that a game that can use this, that doesn't use it, could possibly ever feel as good as a game that does use it. Like, if the genre it exists in can support it, like, for instance, Hawken, like a mech combat game, then the Oculus doesn't get in the way or kind of obscure control. It adds layers of control.
Right.
And I think that once people get to experience it themselves, you're not going to have to sell them. They're going to just be ravenous for it. That's what I think. I think that's how good it is.
I think that's the case for Oculus. I think it's a different story for Morpheus.
I haven't tried Morpheus yet.
But I mean, I'm not even talking about the quality of the product. I think that there's different audiences they're going for. Mm. I think the PC gamer who's so into their games is willing to put down it or back or do whatever with an Oculus, I think, is a different person than the console gamer. I think that you're dealing with different install bases in different markets.
It's possible, but I mean, it's all about, like, oh my god, what did I play at Jimmy's house? And I feel like a lot of kids.
What did you play at Jimmy's house?
Nothing. Spin the Jimmy bottle. Hated me. Jimmy didn't like me.
Get out of here.
But I think a lot when a kid, or even a young adult goes over to their friend's place and they're looking around a real world, they're gonna go, holy shit, I need this in my life. That's what I think.
All right, we'll see.
Number 10, some release dates. Diablo 3 Ultimate Evil Edition has released on PS3 and PS4, as well as Xbox 360 and Xbox One. The game will launch on August 19th. World War One game Valiant Hearts The Great War, which I'm very excited about, also has released on PS4, PS3, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and PC. It will launch on June 25th. Unfortunately, upcoming survival horror game Dying Light has been delayed and will not launch until February 2015.
That game looks cool.
It does look cool. It's from Techland, right?
Right. It's Mirror's Edge meets Dead Island.
Yes, please.
It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. Number 11. Here are the new games that have been announced for PlayStation platforms over the last week.
Switch.
Atmospheric puzzle game Never Alone has been revealed for PS4 as well as Xbox One and PC. Bizarre first-person shooter Visionek has been announced for PlayStation 4. Atelier Verona Plus, which Vince will be reviewing, has been revealed for PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita and has been given a late June release date.
Nope.
Old school shooter R-Type Dimensions, which looks awesome, has been announced for PlayStation 3 and has been given a release date of May 20th in North America and May 21st in Europe. CD Brawler, putting it lightly, Senran Kagura Shinobi Versus, will migrate from Japan to the West on PlayStation Vita. And six new Japanese PS1 classics are coming soon to PSN. They are Sarara's Little Shop, Dragon Beat Legend of Pinball, Neo Planet, Heroin Dream.
I like how you say each one and then look at me.
Did you just say Heroin Dream?
I'm having Heroin Dream.
Heroin
over here.
Dream 2 and Tokyo 23 Kusifuku Wars.
Good pronunciations.
Thank you.
Colin's a pro.
I've been to Japan once, so.
You picked it all up?
Yeah.
Just like riding a bike?
Basically speak it. Basically speak the language.
Wow, that's impressive.
You said heroin dream, and the first thing I thought of was tourniquets, not like a female hero.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure that's not what they meant.
No,
maybe they did. I don't know. That'd be awesome if it was heroin dreams.
Vince, all those games sound great.
They sound spectacular. You and I are going to play the fuck out of all of those.
But they're not out yet.
No, sadly.
So if I wanted to know what was in stores now, where would I go?
You would go to the PlayStation Store.
No, you go to the Andrew Goldfarb Memorial upcoming list of all PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
That's close. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, that was the first time I totally screwed it up.
Yeah, you fucked it up.
This is
a really barren week. No PlayStation 4 games. That's the first time in
one tumbleweed.
That's the first time in a long time there hasn't been a PS4 game. So we can let it go. There's other things to play. Plus, I have Transistor now. On PS3, The Walking Dead Season 2, Episode 3, In Harm's Way launches today.
Bing, bing, bing.
And on PlayStation Vita, Borderlands 2 comes out for everyone. You had it last week if you bought the bundle. And Soul Sacrifice Delta also comes out today.
Please look forward to it.
Please look forward to Soul Sacrifice.
No word in the post if the In Harm's Way comes out to Vita at the same time, right?
No, it's not.
That was such a disaster getting those first two episodes to Vita. I can't imagine.
In the documents it does not say Vita.
No surprise there, but Borderlands 2 is out.
Borderlands 2 is out for Vita, is it not?
Vince, you reviewed it.
I sure did.
And everyone on the internet hates you now.
Hates
for
me
it.
Now, which is fine. They all hated
welcome
me before
to the club.
Anyway.
Yeah! Colin and I know that feeling. Woo! You review a game, you give your opinion, everybody Woo! Wants you to die. So
yep.
That's cool.
It's all right.
No, you reviewed Borderlands.
I did.
On Vita. Gave it a 5.4?
Yes, that's correct.
That's what it was?
All
right.
That is the number.
Metacritic currently sitting at a 6.1, if you're wondering at home.
Correct.
Not many people have reviewed it, though.
That's right. It's only four. At last I checked, it was only four reviews. It was us. It was Jim over at
The Escapist. Yeah.
One other site that I forgot the name of, and then PlayStation Lifestyle gave it like a 95.
Okay. So in a nutshell,
mm-hmm.
pros and cons, let me hear.
Sure. I mean, the biggest pro is that it's Borderlands fucking 2. And
sure.
Borderlands 2 is just a great game.
Right.
I've been like that was an Anthony Gallegos review joint back in the day, and then I was freelancing at the time and I did all of the DLC reviews. I love Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
Really excited about the pre-sequel even though the name is dumb. So yeah, anything that's good about Borderlands 2 Vita is because Borderlands 2 is just an incredibly fun, addictive game that's had legs for 2 years now. As far as the cons go, well, I mean, you said it's all – we were talking about frame rates before, right? Frame rates and visuals and all that stuff and how, you know, does it matter? I just wanted the game to be fun. At the end of the day, frame rate and fun can be very directly linked.
Yes.
Yeah, so in a – particularly when frame rates aren't consistent, when performance is getting in the way of playability, and especially this is the case with first-person shooters. I mean, it's a precision genre, so you can't really enjoy or get into the rhythm of a first-person shooter when you've got random hitches in the frame rate, when it's already low to begin with. I mean, Borderlands 3, you know, at least to my eye, Borderlands 2, rather, Vita, to my eye, runs well south of 30, if I were to guess. I mean, I've never put it up to fraps or anything, but it looks in the 20, low 20 range.
I played through it today. We'll get to my complaints here in a second.
Sure.
But I played through the opening of it today on the train or whatever, and yeah, definitely it was sub 30.
Yeah, it's definitely sub 30, and it can get worse, and it does get worse when things start getting busy. So it's like you marry that with the fact that there's realities of the Vita hardware. It only has so many buttons. They have to map things in crazy ways. And one of those things requires putting melee and sprinting on the rear touch screen. And, you know, I this isn't just me. I handed it to other people who were excited. There were so many people in this office excited about Borderlands 2 for Vita. And they were like, Vince, I want to try it. I want to see what it's like. I'm like, okay, well, just brace yourself. But I handed them the Vita, didn't tell them anything about it. And they were like, how come this doesn't work? How come half the time when I press for melee, it doesn't come out?
Yeah.
Or when I'm trying to sprint, it just doesn't come out? I mean, like, you just tap it 3-4 times in a row, and it might come out once or twice. It's very finicky where you have to hit it. I understand they didn't want to be a situation where people are accidentally activating stuff, because that's been a problem with rear touch controls in the past. But, I mean, they went too far the other way, where I feel like they made a very specific part of that rear touchpad activatable, and the result is that half the time I just can't do what I want to do. I mean, you can remap the controls, but no matter which way you slice it, two functions are going to be dodgy at best.
Mm-hmm.
And you combine that with the performance problems, and it's just, as much as I love, and I deeply love Borderlands, as much as I love it, it's almost impossible to enjoy even a great game when you can barely control it or track what's going on.
Sure.
It's just...
Let's go to a listener right now. Andrew writes in. Andrew says, Beyond.
Beyond.
I bought a Borderlands 2 Vita bundle last week. I've enjoyed it, but it's easily the worst version of Borderlands 2. There are parts of Vince's reviews that I agree with, but others I feel were a bit harsh. Mm-hmm. He's got more experience with it than I do, but a 5.4 seems a little low. It's his opinion, he can think whatever he wants, and it's nice to see people explore the scale.
Sure.
I wanted to put that out there, because I think people are with you. Not if, this is the whole thing, the problem with being a reviewer, right? Is we feel like everybody's against us. People are with you on it, you know what I mean? And it falls back to the whole thing of... For me, it's always that talking about, you know, like, what's the reviewer's job and how many concessions do you make here or right. there, right? And people were very much like, well, clearly it's not as good as the PS3 version. It's running the Vita, but that should be held against it. And it's like, well, it kind of needs to be, right? Like,
sure.
That's the point that they're trying to make, that it's not the same game and it's not doing this, it's not yeah. doing that. Here's where I got my number one complaint with this is that they didn't have the cross save up and running yet. I got a code yesterday for it. Woke up this morning, started downloading patches on both versions yep. of the game
patches
so I could play
patches.
It. Got there, and then like I turned on the Vita version. It's like, all right, cool. You download your save. And I click it, and it's like, oh, there's no save upload. And I went to the Borderlands 2 PS3, and there's nowhere to upload it. So I quit out and uploaded it to the cloud. Then I came back in. I still couldn't find it. I jumped out. I then started searching around, and there's all these threads about, yeah, that functionality is not working yet. It's getting patched in hopefully today.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be like a day one. That was supposed to be a day one patch deal. And I mean – and maybe this is shame on me. Like I mentioned that the feature is there.
Yeah.
I chose to not hold it against the game that the feature wasn't there when I was reviewing
oh,
it.
Sure.
I understood.
Well, you're reviewing
ahead of time. I understood it was going to be in the day. I was told anyway that it was going to be in the day one update. So
right.
I chose not to take anything away from it for that.
Well, yeah, I'm not knocking you for it.
Yeah.
My complaint is the fact that I've put 30 hours into Borderlands 2. And the reason I'm excited for Borderlands Vita is now getting to go do all the side missions I didn't do and all the DLC I didn't explore and see what it's like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And suddenly today I can't even do that.
Right.
So I have to start as a siren and I'm running through and I'm playing it. And my thing is, like, for the you know, that 15 minutes I get to play on the train or whatever, maybe more like 20, I can't get to the point. Like, I want to talk to you about, so you're, when more things are happening, it's going to run way worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, today I'm playing and I'm like, I could play this. I can play through this. This isn't, you know, I mean, like, unplayable,
right?
But it's gonna get that way. Is that what I'm
sure? And here's the other thing too. That's so you talked about that the reader that wrote in. I think that's a great. His points are very valid. And you know, it comes down to personal preferences. How hard do you dock things?
Yeah.
For me, and this has been a historical thing with me all throughout my time as a gamer, and certainly that's reflected in the scores that I've given to games when I review them, frame rate and performance is just a huge, massive deal to me. It is mm-hmm. a deal breaker. Like, a game that does not have a consistent frame rate, that does not consistently stay up near or at 30, is just, I'm going to hammer it. I don't care what platform it's on. I don't care how weak you're saying the hardware supposedly is. I'm going to slam it. Like, to me, 30 is the minimum space at which the game's technical specs are not interfering with my ability to play it in a fluid fashion.
Sure.
And to me, when you look at what the Vita is capable of, so I pointed some people to this. If you look on YouTube, you look for Killzone Mercenary frame rate, and what will come up is a bunch of Digital Foundry videos where they show I don't know if it's actually Fraps, it's some program they've got running to show the frame rate
sure.
as things are going, and that game looks 2 to 3 times as good as Borderlands 2 on Vita does, and it is at 30. At rest, it's at 30. In combat, it stays almost completely at 30, drops. At one point in one of the videos I saw, it dropped for a split second to 20.
Mm.
But for the most part, the lowest it got was like 25. It held on to 28 or 30 almost the entire time. That is what this hardware is capable of. I understand people don't want a game to be judged against its console counterparts, but I wasn't even judging the performance problems based on console counterparts. I was judging it based on what I've seen the Vita can do.
Vita and, Contemporary is another first person
shooter. Yeah, another first person shooter with highly detailed. Look, if you would say that Borderlands 2 on Vita is console quality, I mean, then Killzone Mercenary is absolutely up to that mark, and the way it runs is night and day, hands down, more consistent and more smooth than what Borderlands 2 offers. So I think that you have to compare it to other things on the platform, and when you do, Borderlands 2's performance just doesn't add up.
I think per your complaints about the performance. They're apt in the sense that if they affect gameplay, then that is the problem. But what I'm trying to say is that people will look at something and be like, look at the resolution, look at the frame rate. You know, like, it sucks. It's garbage. It's not running at 60. It's not all this. And my whole argument is, like, there are games that run sub 30 that are good. You know, and like that can be played and are playable. Maybe they're puzzle games, or maybe they're shitty, like, you know, like.
And if
like,
they're consistent, if they stay like, 25, but it's locked, sure.
Yeah, like exactly. So I'm just saying, like, like resolution is important to some people. That's fine. It's really not important to me. Frame rate is more important to me, but in the sense that it affects gameplay, not in a vacuum. And that's like what I'm kind of trying to say.
Not,
you know?
Not a, like what you're talking about with Watch Dogs. Not just a bullet point on the fact sheet.
Yeah,
that
like if Watch Dogs is locked at 30, like who cares if it's good? You know what I mean? Like that's all I care about. Like is it being at 60 going to make it much much better? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. You know, like, that's all I'm trying to say is, like, people have these, like, this resolution warfare and this frame rate warfare without really asking ourselves the question, like, does it really super adversely affect the gameplay? And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And that's, like, all I'm trying to say is, like, let's look at the mechanics of a game. Let's look at the gameplay of a game. That's what's most important to me, as opposed to, you know, these things that might or might not affect it that are more technical than... you know, real. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where I'm coming from with that. And I think I frankly think a lot of people do feel that way, but they're not loud. You know?
Well, yeah, there's the vocal minority we always talk about.
I totally respect what you're saying. I'm also going to poke or attempt to poke two holes in that. First thing is that I can say that I certainly feel, and I think there's a large number of people who feel that, particularly for shooters and fighting games. Or anything where you have to shoot, not just first person, anything where you have to shoot, you need some kind of precision. 60 frames per second offers a superior play experience, not just the way it looks, but there's a finer degree of responsiveness and control. This is why Call of Duty is so – one of the reasons why Call of Duty is so popular. It's because even more – I don't want to say that Call of Duty players are casual players because they're very hardcore Call of Duty players and it's played competitively. But this is why – one of the reasons Call of Duty has such a broad appeal and why people love the way it plays and love the way it feels. Because at 60 frames per second, shooting and anything precision-based feels like a dream. And like once you've tasted that and had that, you don't want anything – less than that, you know, because you want that feeling of fluidity and precision in your play experience, not just the way it looks, in your play experience all the time. The other thing I was going to say, which is a little bit more up for debate, I think, is that I know you're saying that resolution doesn't really matter to you. At the same time, if I recall correctly, you and I have had conversations where you were saying that you wanted to see if you can buy another launch Vita because you don't want to lose that OLED screen.
Yeah, but I like the screen. I like the sure. I more like the. That's true, and that's a good point. Not necessarily. You know,
I'm not saying you're a hypocrite. I'm not saying you're a hypocrite. I'm not saying you're a hypocrite.
No,
I'm saying what I'm saying is I think you and other people do care about how sharp the picture is.
Well, I care about that. I like the OLED screen. I'm more concerned with the way the new Vita feels than I feel like I can break it in half.
I was having but I wasn't accidentally touching the touchscreen today on my Japanese Vita, which is the Slim Vita, because of those nice giant dividends in the back.
Yeah, I think I probably missed the boat on getting my OLED Vita. I think they're probably
Tim tried to get one.
But yeah, OLED is a consideration. Bigger consideration for me was the way that it felt when I first played at Tokyo. I was not impressed. I felt like I could just fucking break it,
right?
Which I don't like the feeling of. But yeah, I'm not saying that people are wrong or that, like, you know, fights about resolution are always uncalled for, or that, you know, frame rate especially can affect gameplay. That's absolutely true. All I'm saying is that we often look at the numbers on a sheet and then judge the game. And I think it has to go the other way around. You got to, like, judge the game and then say, you know, instead of saying it runs at this, you know, resolution and this frame rate, therefore the game is this. What I would want people to say is the game is this. Is this the reason?
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, we often don't get that argument because it's nuanced and it's too big for Twitter or a comment on an IGN article.
Right.
You know. So that's all I'm saying.
Ain't nobody got time for nuance in the 21st century.
No, definitely not. So that's all I'm saying. Like, I hate these our battles because I want people to get this passionate about mechanics and gameplay.
Sure.
Or our government.
Story. Yeah. Or real things that matter. But you know what I mean? Like, I want people to have these passionate things about character development, these passionate conversations about, why is this mechanic better than this mechanic? Like, you don't hear that a lot. You often, like on the base level, you just hear people complaining about 1080 and like stats, 60 frames. It's like, who gives a shit? You know, like, let's talk about the mechanics and let's talk about the game. You know, the game. And that's like what I want more of from people, because I feel like it's lowest common denominator shit at this point. Like, let's move past it and see if we can start getting into the meat.
You know? I totally agree with you. I don't think we talk about, not just us, like personally, I think that mechanics and what makes a mechanic rewarding and what makes a mechanic well designed to where it positively reinforces certain like behaviors from the player. Like, people don't talk about those things, and those are things that don't require technology necessarily to advance. They just require good engineering and good design, you know, study. And you're right. I think we don't talk about those things enough. I guess the reason why so many people react so strongly to the resolution side of things and to the frame rate side of things, aside from kind of like, you know, bipartisan console, you know, fanboy politics, aside from that, I say this all the time to people. The term video game is two words. It's video and it's game. And, you know, the game has to play great. But there's this whole video element. You know, to me, ignoring the importance and the impact of visual quality, to me, is just as out there as saying that the way a piece of art looks isn't important.
Like, right, but, you know. but to me, it goes back to, like, I reviewed Titan Attacks recently, right? This is a Space Invaders clone. This is Space Invaders, which came out in 1978. It's really one of the classic games of all time. Mm-hmm. If you've never played it, you really need to go find an arcade machine and play it. But,
well, now you can just play Titan Attacks.
But, yeah. So Titan Attacks is a very basic game. It narrows the field. It's really in, like, 4-3. And, like, it's just this very basic game, right? And someone in the comments was like, this game looks like shit. You know? And, like, that's the kind of, like, who cares what it looks like? You know, like, have you played it? It's fun. It's very addictive. It's all about leaderboards and high score chasing, just like Resogun was. But Resogun's actually really pretty. And that's the kind of thing I'm trying to, like, fight against. Because, like, when people say, like, look at Mega Man. Look how bad it looks. I'm still waiting for someone to find a game that plays better than Mega Man to me. Because, like, I've never played that game. You know? So, like, I don't care. Mega Man 3 runs extraordinarily well, except for all the slowdown everywhere.
Right.
But you actually get used to it and actually use it to your advantage when you learn the game. But, you know, Mega Man 3 to me is the quintessential gameplay experience.
Besides Mega Man 2.
And Mega Man, well, they play the same, so Mega Man 3 is a better game. But, you know, like, that's an 8-bit NES game, you know? Yeah. Like, that could not stack up to anything, technically, that's being made today. But I like to focus on the mechanics, and, man, Mega Man is just that pure fucking shit right there. You know what I mean? Like it does, I don't care how pretty. You know, I like Call of Duty. I play the campaign every year, right? Like, and those games are fun, and I enjoy the campaign. I don't play online. I just play the campaign. I really like it. And they're fun, and they really do have shooting down. But, man, like, I still go back to some of those old NES games, and I'm like, these are the games that really play well, or the old arcade games like Space Invaders or Arkanoid or Miss Pac-Man. Like, these old ideas that are better than the new ideas, you know? And
Punch-Out is my big example from that era. I Punch-Out, to me, consistently, I go back, why did no one else mind these ideas, except for Infinity Blade and Shadow of the Colossus are the only two modern games I can think of that mine those ideas.
Yeah, and that's a great example. Like, so some of these old ideas, I just don't want people, like, I feel like a new generation of people are coming up that are fixated on the technical and not fixated on the gameplay. And I just want to try to nip that in the bud whenever I can, because if you focus on only these games and you look at an NES game and you're like, this is ugly and terrible looking, it's like, well, you lose, you know? Because, like, there's just Kid Icarus or Zelda or Faxanadu, or, like, all, you know, Dragon Quest, and all these amazing games, like, you would never play them because they're fucking terrible looking, you know? And, like, that's the only thing that I'm saying, you know.
I mean, this argument isn't anything new, though, right? It's always that thing, jumping from NES to Super NES, right, or Super NES to N64, oh my god, the graphics! It's because it's the easiest thing to wrap your head around when you're looking at a page.
Sure.
When you're not playing a game, all you can do is judge it off of that, which gets to be a complicated issue.
Now, I will see the point to Vince in a couple of ways. One is that when I came out here, I never had an HDTV, nor did I know anyone that had an HDTV in college, because we were all poor.
Yeah, right.
So, when I came here, I, like, started using my HDTV at my desk, whatever, and I'm like, wow, this is really...
Yeah.
It's not, like, all squished anymore, and, like, it's, like, there's, like, resolution, and, like, you can, like, beautiful colors and vibrancy. And then when I went home and finally got my own HDTV and I started watching football and hockey on it, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know? And then it would really pop when I'd go to other people's houses at that time, because HDTV still didn't proliferate really in 2007, 2008, and they were still having their box TVs and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, my
You don't know what you're missing.
What
the fuck?
You know what I mean? So I totally understand that argument because like that popped in me because I was like, I didn't know what I was missing. So that's one point. The second point is that resolution does matter to me in the sense that when I play my 3DS, I'm like, my God. You know, like I there's some great games on there that I play. Fire Emblem I spend some time with, and Mario Golf we're playing right now. When I play the Mario games that come out or whatever. You know, when I played Zelda over Christmas break, I was like, these are fun games, but holy shit. You know, like, I'm like, wow. Like, I can't look at it. That's where I fall into your gameplay side.
Well, yeah, it's noticeable. I'm like, oh, this doesn't look amazing, but like, I get so lost in the gameplay, I don't care. I'm just with my 80 hours with Mario Golf or my, you know, 20 with Zelda, right. You know what I mean? Once you're through that initial thing of like, okay, whatever. Like, oh, yeah, this would have looked better on Vita or on the Wii U or anything. You know what I mean? Then you're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I played Zelda. I enjoyed it. It didn't stop me from playing Fire Emblem or all these things. But when you look at it, you're like, so I agree with you. Like, these things do matter in a current contemporary sense in that I play 3DS after playing a bunch of Vita. And I'm like, okay, you know, like, here we are. But what, you know what that tells me? Because the 3DS is outselling Vita like 10-1. Is that
doesn't matter?
Maybe it doesn't matter to a lot of people, you know. And maybe we just have to keep that in context.
Yeah,
you know.
So sure.
So that's it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, and the through line that I try to draw through all of this is that what it really comes down to, it's not that 3D graphics are better than 2D graphics. It's not that a 30 frames per second game can't be as good as a 60 frames per second game, or that a game running in 1080p is always going to be better than a game running at 720p, right? The real thing is when technical limitations are interfering with and marring not just the player's experience gameplay-wise, but I would say that when the technical aspects of a platform are getting in the way of the creator's vision, I don't – like, for instance, the way that – like you said with these 3DS games, I don't think the artists envisioned their games looking blurry like that. Like, that's not how they envisioned them. They envisioned them looking sharp and crisp and beautiful, but they're working with what they have. And that's why I like the Wii U in terms of the way it looks, because trying to play a game on the Wii, like you said, because it was all standard definition stuff on the Wii, I was like, I'm not looking at what the creator intended. I'm looking at what they wanted to make filtered through these other limitations of technology. And then when I look at, say, Mario Kart 8 running, I'm just like, because now I'm seeing all that wide-eyed imagination that Nintendo can bring, but it's like putting on a new pair of glasses and actually seeing it the way it's meant to be seen. And I feel like when technical issues get in the way of communicating what the creators want to communicate, that's frustrating for me. And maybe for some people it's not as frustrating, and I'll admit that. But for me, it makes me want to like throw something.
One other point I want to bring up, if I may, about Borderlands, which I think is interesting, is that they showed me the game, as you guys know, and I think they showed me very selective parts of the games that didn't have really a lot of enemies and all these kinds of things. The game ran, you know, like we always say, I don't have one of those savant 29.5 frames.
You said before you can't see it.
Yeah, like Carmack or something, yeah. Where he's like, oh, I can't ship this because it's running at 59.8 frames a second. It's like, well, okay. But I can tell, you know, like, you know, bad frame rate, really bad frame rate, okay frame rate, good sure. frame rate, great frame rate. And you know, like I think most people can. I'm not one of those guys like, this is 28 frames a second. You know, I need one of those, like you said, one of those like right. indicators.
The old Craig Harris eye.
Right, or Craig Harris, yeah. Craig Harris's eye would be very good. And the game was running, they claim, between 28 and 32 frames a second. And that seemed to pass the test for me, except for some dips I saw with lots of enemies on the screen, like you said. But I also wonder if Borderlands isn't running well because we talk about Killzone, or we talk even about Uncharted, mm-hmm. and I still say Uncharted is the prettiest and best running game, console quality game on the system, which is a launch game. We'll probably never get anything better than that in that regard. Borderlands is open world, and I wonder if, you know, that is part of the limitation too. Killzone, you're on a map, you're on a part of a map.
Right.
And so this gives you, they close everything around it, and then, you know, and then they, you know, turn on the AI and the hell gas come out. With Uncharted, it's even more linear and more corridor driven.
Sure.
I wonder if there was just some hitch with Borderlands 2 where it's like they turn shit off in the background. They got, you know, when there would be 12 enemies on PS3, there are 9 enemies on Vita. You know, they got rid of the ragdolling. They did all of this shit to like make the game run better. And I wonder if, you know, knowing some of the guys, we know some of the guys that worked on it mm-hmm. that are really smart dudes at Sony.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's just the open world nature of the game, which is like, Vita just can't do it. You know, like, and I, like, there's just too much shit, you know, because
yeah.
Vita doesn't know if you're on a map, if you're on like a map and you're fighting some dudes, you're not just going to fucking run away and go into like some crazy direction
right.
to the other side of the map. Like, and it has to have it loaded, or at least it has to have the algorithm to know that if you turn around and start running, then it better load it quick, you know? And so I wonder if that is part of the technical issue why the game just wasn't running well.
It certainly is. And like, I'm not trying to derail us completely here, but that brings
we're a conversational podcast.
That brings me to a bigger question, which is, should developers make decisions about whether or not they should port something to a platform? Like, at what point does a developer or a publisher go, look, this would require too many compromises, and maybe this is just not the best thing to do? And I mean, I guess the answer is in the numbers, right? I guess there's tons of people out there right now who are skewering me and saying they're having a great time with Borderlands 2 Vita, which is great. I'm happy people are enjoying what they paid for. That's all I want to see, is people having a good time. But maybe they said to themselves, look, some people will call it out and other people won't. And enough people won't that we'll make back our money. I mean, at what point do you – beyond just economics, yeah. At what point do you say maybe this is something that's not really suited for this platform?
Yeah, I think that my take on it is that they realized that it wasn't going to work too late, like in the way that they wanted it to. Like, they very unwisely announced that bundle, you know, which gave Iron Galaxy a hard end date. You know, maybe right. They could have massaged it for 6 more months. Maybe that would have been the wiser decision to do that. Release it around when Borderlands pre-sequel comes out. That, like, you know, oh, Borderlands 2 is also on Vita if you want to play. And maybe it runs a little bit better. Maybe the frame rate's a little bit better. All these kinds of things. And I think it was a victim of bad timing. I think it was a victim of, you know, listening to your fans and listening to what people want, but not gauging that against the realism. Like, I want Fallout 3 on Vita. Fallout 3 would never run on Vita. Never.
Yeah,
you know, if Borderlands 2 couldn't run on Vita, there's no way, because that is an open world.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and like, and you can run from one end of that map to the other with no loading. You know, and that's a huge map. So it's not like Borderlands with territories and things like that.
Sure.
So I just wonder. I think it was educational. I think Borderlands 2 is educational in the sense that it's just going to show companies that like some of these games just aren't going to work, and that sucks. Because man, wouldn't it be awesome to have New Vegas? You know.
Funny you say that. We have two reader questions, both driving at the same topic, but from different parts of the spectrum. Taylor writes in and says, Beyond. God, it's like your first podcast, you two. He says, I picked up Borderlands 2 bundle last weekend. I'm loving the experience so far. My question is, if Borderlands turns out to be a successful experiment for Sony, what other big titles do you think would have a shot to make their way to the Vita? Meanwhile, Charlie Gadsden writes in and says, Beyond. It's no secret that there are many developers with their eye on how well Borderlands Vita does. After IGN has posted its mediocre score of the game and word of mouth spreads about its mediocrity, it's only natural to ask, is Borderlands Vita the last AAA game on Sony's handheld?
Well, I think we've already seen a little bit of help me out here a little bit, Colin. We saw a story out this week about someone at Sony discussing that the economics of AAA just don't work.
This was, I thought it was somebody from Xbox, wasn't it, Spencer? Said something to this effect earlier this week, too, that there was no economy for AAA games on Vita.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I'm blanking on where the story came out of or who it was.
I'm not sure I saw that.
Yeah, no, I definitely read it somewhere this week. I'm so prepared, guys. Sorry.
I think I just nailed it for you, so don't worry. I'll double check that while you talk.
Cool. And I feel like this is a great – like I've felt from the beginning that is great – I've often said that Uncharted Golden Abyss was the worst thing that could have happened to the Vita. And not because the game wasn't amazing, because it was. But it – right out of the gate, it made it seem like the expectation of at-home console-quality gaming on the go was something viable. And I've never believed that it was. Not necessarily always from an economic standpoint, but from a design standpoint – the idea of what you want to do when you're in a game portably, when you're sitting on a train or standing in line, or when you're even when you're on a plane, for me is just fundamentally different than how you design a game for when I sit down on my couch and I'm going to play for 4, 5, 6 hours straight.
You were correct. Don Mesa. Quote, the economics simply don't work with the traditional process. good AAA. I'm sorry, I'll read the whole thing. Process SEAs, product planning and platform software innovation director Don Mesa said in a response to a fan asking for more quote good AAA games on Vita along lines of Killzone and Golden Abyss. Quote, we have to do something different to get AAA games on Vita. We accomplished it to a certain degree by making PS4 games work on the Vita via remote play. PS Now will be another way streaming PlayStation 3 games on the Vita. Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, that's just where I do believe that Borderlands 2 will be the beginning. Like you said, it's a learning experience. And for me, I feel like the lesson is not that you can't – not that the Vita is underpowered, not that the Vita can't do certain things. The question isn't whether or not it can do it. It's whether or not it should do it. Does it make business sense, and does it result in greater games? Going back to your point again before about graphics don't necessarily make a game play better, or you know, more technically sound or more technically impressive games don't make a game better. The highest review I've given out well, the second highest review now that I've given out all the time I've been writing reviews for IGN was for Stealth Inc. Yeah, it was for Stealth Inc., which is a 2D side-scrolling platform puzzler with that's technically very basic but artistically very recognizable and interesting in terms of the way the art design works and to me that's what I want to see more of on the Vita. When people look at I had this same conversation with several people in the audience and in the office, and it was very sad. Hey, how's Borderlands 2 on Vita? I'm like, it's not that great. Here, try it for yourself. What do you see what you think? And then like, well, there goes all my hope for the Vita. I guess I'm never going to have any games on this thing. And I'm like,
There's so
many games on this system. There's so many good small scale, you know, indie – and not just non-indie, just smaller scale games that are designed from the ground up to be portable experiences. And that's what I want on a portable system. I don't need, you know, a AAA 20-hour adventure.
This goes back, I think, to a couple things. And it's, again, a little bit marketing and salesmanship, right? The Vita was pitched as a console in your pocket. It's the console experience. You finally get your two sticks, and that's what people got hung up on. Mm-hmm. And it's similar to the PlayStation Move thing, but – it's weird because the PlayStation Move, right, is great when it's a game built from the ground up for it. Mm-hmm. Vita games are great when they're built from the ground up for it. But the problem is the games that are great on Vita aren't the games you were pitched originally. They aren't the console experience for the most part, right?
Yeah, there's a few, but not many. And I think – so to answer one of the guy's questions, which was like, is this the last AAA game we're going to get on Vita? Absolutely not. Like, first party will release more games. Freedom Wars is a huge game, and that's going to come out later this year from Sony Japan. And – Gravity Rush 2 is going to come out eventually too, and that's another AAA game. And I think there'll be more. I think there's going to be more third-party AAA games. I think you could see, and this is not. I don't know anything. I'm just saying.
Don't turn this into an article.
Yeah, like I think you could. I think there's potentially you can see a Batman game, or like not the one we got like on Vita, but like a, you know, Arkham or Origins or something like that. A game like that could probably run on Vita.
No way.
I think you could. You don't think that game could run on Vita?
Arkham Origins.
I'm sorry, Arkham. Yeah, the third game, Arkham, the one that came prequel. Out last year.
A giant open world Batman game?
That's not a huge open world.
It's bigger than Batman Arkham City was.
Yeah, but that's not. I don't think, like, Borderlands 2-ish.
Real quick while we're here, this one goes to TJ. TJ wrote and said, just wanted to share a couple of screenshots from my PlayStation 4 trophy list. Batman Arkham Origins, not Blackgate, is shown with a shared trophy list for Vita and PS3. Any chance this could be ported to Vita, or is it just an error?
That's probably an error.
I reached out to WB. I think it's just an error. They haven't responded yet.
Yeah, I think people have... That's been there for a while. But I think... In other words, I think that there's some companies that are looking at what's going on Vita and seeing some success with some of their products. Like the Lego games keep coming to Vita, they wouldn't do that if that wasn't the case. Atelier games keep coming to Vita, they wouldn't keep releasing those So there's some success with some of these more mid tier and some higher tier games. But I agree. I think the system will be mostly relegated to indies and JRPGs and all these kinds of things, which is fantastic to me because indie is not a bad word to me, like it is to other people for whatever reason. And but I do agree that it also is about the time and money that a company has or a developer has and the talent at that developer. And Iron Galaxy is a good developer, but they are not Sony Bend and they are not Guerrilla, you know? And like those were first party studios with lots of knowledge and know-how with the Vita and time to make their games. So when they ported Killzone 3's engine to Vita, that looked really good and it played really well, you know? When they basically made Drake's Fortune play on Vita, that worked really well and it looked really good. So Like Don Mesa said, the economics don't work. So like,
And that's where it gets tricky, right? Yeah. I disagree with you. I don't think you'll see more AAA games from third-party developers. I think this probably is the last gasp. I think that it'll act as a warning sign of not to do this. That you can, like, should we do this, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we say, should we do it, then we get to this weird spot of, what are we going to define as a AAA thing? If it's an Assassin's Creed card game, you know what I mean? Like, if it's not the experience you expect, right? If it's something different, does that still count? Like, brands... I just think third parties are going to stay the hell away from it for a long time.
I don't know. I think it's my personal gut instinct is that it's too late. That I think that there are multiple third party games in the pipeline.
Probably
already.
Some in the pipeline. You're right.
And that, you know, they certainly talk like there is.
Yeah.
And I don't know what those games could be, and I don't know what those games are, but
Marble Madness.
Maybe one of them hits. I still say that, you know,
totally possible.
I still say what I said a few weeks ago, which is that putting Borderlands 2 in this position as the definitive, like, experience that this was going to be like the proof in the, you know, in the pudding was a mistake, and they shouldn't have done it. If they just released Borderlands 2 as a game and it wasn't very good, that was different. Bundling it with the Slim was a bad idea. And like,
well, see, that's the weird thing about it. When I go back to Taylor's question, Taylor was the first question, right? Could this be like more big console games coming? A lot of people are buying this bundle, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And if they see the numbers on that, and the fan response is mainly, hey, this wasn't bad. We're fine with it. You know what I mean? Like, review scores don't mean shit to anybody if the game sells through the roof, right?
Right, that's
true. We got another Naughty Bear. Jesus God. You know what I mean?
Like, right, we got a second Naughty Bear.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I reviewed it.
That was a game with frame rate problems.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a game that the frame rate affected the gameplay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just like in Borderlands 2 for Vita.
All right,
fair enough. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
We just did a whole show about Borderlands 2 Vita.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love this show, the conversational podcast. Here's two quick questions. We'll get through them quick, all right?
Okay.
Matt writes in and says, Beyond.
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 Greeting Greg, Colin, in the ever-rotating third chair. I recently won 2 tickets to E3. Yes, that E3, through my employer, and I had a couple questions. The tickets say the event runs June 10th through the 12th, but all the major press conferences are on June 9th. What happens June 10th through the 12th then? Is it still worth me going? I live quite a ways from Los Angeles, Missouri to be specific, MIZZOU. So it's going to be costly. Will you guys be there? Thanks, Beyond.
There's a lot of questions there. So the first question is that the press conferences are always the day before E3, and you will not get into those without invites to those press conferences.
You have to win a whole different competition.
Yeah, so your tickets to E3 will not get you into the press conferences.
However... they will get you into the Los Angeles Convention Center, right, where all the awesome games are.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Anything that's playable is going to be playable there. You got to go play it.
So E3 is the press conferences are the most important part of E3, but
sure.
And they don't happen at E3, so that's true. But yeah, the 3 days on the show floor when you can walk around, you know, all the halls and get your hands on with games and talk to people and meet people, that's what E3 really is, and you will get to have that experience. And yes, we will be there.
Yeah, of course we will. Look for us on the floor. Look for.
I think this is my I was in my 8th or 9th E3.
Wow.
Aren't you so excited, Colin?
You're so old.
Oh, God, I'm thrilled. I love E3.
Macca writes in and says, was just reading Colin's article about why Sunset Overdrive is an Xbox exclusive, and one main point struck me. It was mentioned that one of Insomniac's main requirements in their publishing negotiations was that they own the IP. Mm-hmm. Does this mean that we could see Sunset Overdrive or a sequel on PS4 somewhere down the line?
So, as far as I understand, Sunset Overdrive 1 will never appear on anything but Xbox One, and maybe it can come to PC at some point, but it'll never be on PlayStation. Sunset Overdrive 2 could absolutely be a PlayStation game.
Good call on their part.
So, they're desperate to own their own IP.
Right.
You have to understand, Insomniac's experience has been like, oh, we created Spyro? Well, fuck
Activision
us.
Gets that.
You know? Oh, we created Ratchet and Clank? Well, we lost that. We don't own any of that. Oh, we created Resistance? Well, we don't own any of that. So they were like, no, we own our IP. Because look what happened. Spyro especially was like... I think very painful for them to see, like, Skylanders is huge.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and that's their character. And they can't do anything about it.
My heart breaks for them when I think about that.
So, you know, you have to understand that Ted Price's experience and those guys' experience is like, we make these great games, these mascots. Not so much Resistance. I love Resistance, but Ratchet and Spyro. And we don't own them. So with Fuse, which was a bad game by all accounts, I didn't play it, or a mediocre game, they still own that IP, and they own... Outer Knots, which is a Facebook game, and now they own Sunset Overdrive. So, you know, and I think Microsoft just really wanted to work with them, because I don't think Microsoft would usually go into a negotiation and be like, oh, we don't actually own anything you're doing. You know, we're publishing the game and funding your game,
sure,
but we don't own the IP. I think it was to more be like, you know, to Sony and be like, we're taking one of your devs.
That's exactly what it was. It was a shot to Sony, which they've been searching in terms of PR strategy and perception in the, you know, from the consumer and from average Joe gamer. They've been dying to have something they can, you know, they can burn Sony's britches over. And this was it.
And it's a good get for them. Sunset's a good game, and there's some problems with it. You know, I played it very early. I played it for an hour, though, and so it's a pretty extensive preview of time to play the game, and it's definitely a game worth being excited about. It is an Insomniac game.
When's it coming out?
This fall.
Great.
It is an Insomniac game.
Crazy guns.
Yeah, just humor. Crazy story, doesn't take itself seriously. You know, Resistance was like kind of a weird game for them. You know, it was, you know, it's more like Ratchet. To me, it's the evolution of Ratchet.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Podcast Beyond episode 342. Thank you so much for your time. Remember, each and every week, Podcast Beyond goes live. Tuesday, it's the MP3. Wednesday, it's the video on IGN.com, YouTube.com/IGN, and the PlayStation 4 IGN app, which costs you nothing, Vince.
Nothing!
Why wouldn't you download it?
For no reason would you not download it.
That's right. Keep up with everything we're doing, please. You can go to IGN.com, and you should read the articles, watch the videos. That's what keeps these microphones on. Then make sure you follow everybody on Twitter. IGN is IGN. I'm Game Over Greggy. Colin is No Taxation. Vince is Vincognito. I nailed it?
Nailed it.
Give me a high five. Bam! That's how you know you've made it on Beyond, when I don't screw up your Twitter handle.
I guess Goldfarb never made it.
Nope. Every Podcast Beyond ends in a segment we call Ryan's Wrap-Up. It's where we play a listener song. You sent it in to beyond@ign.com, just like you can your questions. Today's comes from Justin C. He says, Beyond. A few weeks ago, I was feeling very inspired by the soundtrack for Streets of Rage 2 for the Sega Genesis.
Yes!
That game is still one of the best beat-em-ups ever made, second only to River City Ransom. And such a memorable and distinct music to accompany all the bare-knuckled action. The result is this track. I named it after one of the best female characters I can remember playing in a video game, Blaze Fielding. All of my music available to listen and download completely free on soundcloud.com/Evalay. That seems like one of those weird names you'd know.
Evalay, we'll go with that. Evalay.
E-V-A-L-E-I-G-H. Beyond Justin C. Justin C., it's our privilege to play this song called Blaze Fielding. Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.